Welcome everyone to the Telecommunication Regulation Infrastructure Division. We're going to get started for this morning. And we're going to get an overview of the statewide video franchising study that was completed. We have a couple guests with us that are going to provide the presentation. And we have about an hour roughly to go over the report. And I welcome our guest this morning. If you want to introduce yourself and take it away, that'd be fantastic.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Steve Kelly. I'm the director of the Center for Science, Technology, and Public Policy, which is based at the Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. And we had an opportunity to work on a report for the legislature related to video franchising in other states. We appreciate the opportunity to serve the state on these kinds of research projects that involve the application of science and technology issues to public policy.
Hold on for 1 second there. It was the red phone. Don't get nervous.
Mr. Chairman, the telecommunications gremlins even plague this committee, you know. So and the way the center does projects of this type is that we try to identify a principal investigator for the work, and then we also ask research assistants at the University of Minnesota, and some of them are at the Humphrey Institute, to work on this. So let me introduce Kay Husbands Feeling, who is a professor at the Humphrey Institute. She's an economist by training and background, and has taught at Williams College, and then we were fortunate to have her come to the University of Minnesota, where she teaches classes including economics and other policy analysis classes. And she, because of her economics background, seemed to be the perfect fit for doing the research work on this project. We also have with us two University of Minnesota students, Nick Sotimbo and Matt Henry, both of whom worked on the report. So I will turn it over to Dr. Husbands Feeling for the presentation. She did the analysis, a fact that ought to make some of the telecommunications advocates in the room more comfortable that I wasn't the one doing the analysis. And I let Dr. Husbands Feeling proceed.
Well, thank you very much.
Welcome, Doctor. Again, if you could identify yourself for the record. Go ahead.
I'm Kay Husbands Feeling, Professor of Economics at the Humphrey Institute for Public Affairs. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I'm very happy to be here this morning, and I hope that my comments and this presentation will be somewhat clear in the sense of what we set out to do, what the questions were, how the analysis proceeded, and what we found, what the results are, and then we'll talk through some of the conclusions and potential recommendations as well toward the end. And that should take about 20 minutes or so, and then happy to entertain questions after that. So if you don't mind, I'll just proceed according to some slides I have. And you have the report in front of you. If you don't have a copy, there are many copies here on the side. And from time to time, I'll refer to a chart or two in the report just to keep you abreast of how things are proceeding. The purpose of this study, we had very clear directives from the Department of Commerce on what we needed to investigate in the study of multi-video franchise, statewide franchising. And we also were asked to talk to stakeholders in the area, and we did do so. We talked to stakeholders, municipalities and PEG representatives, communities basically, as well as communities of color. So we had two sets of meetings before we started the analysis to take not only what we were directed to look into, what areas of investigation were very important to the department, but also to find out, well, what did other communities want to see included, or what were some of the questions or issues that were outlined on this particular topic. Now, let me give you a couple of questions that I think will help us to focus in on, well, what are the key issues here? The first question that we want to think about is, does competition have a measurable market impact in the multi-channel video industry? So is there an impact from having increased competition in the industry? If so, then what is the size of that impact? Can we measure it? How can we measure it? And what will we find out if we were to look across many different states where this is rolled in? What impact could we discern? That's one big question. The second question that I'd like you to think about as we go through this is, what can we learn from other states about the impact of statewide video franchising laws on the video market? So not only can there be effect, but what can we learn from investigating other states? Now, a sub-question here, and this is what I think is the back of everybody's mind, is there a causal relationship here between franchising laws and the increase in competition and the potential for declining prices in this particular industry? And we want to try to get a sense of, can we discern any causality here? Is there a relationship of cause and effect? So those are the two big questions that we were after, and there are several subcomponents of those questions. So, you know, the interest here is in the details, but at the very top level, that's what we're after. From talking to the different groups, the couple of different groups that we have to interview, those were the questions on their minds as well, with obviously for some context. So we're all on the same page in terms of what's important here. What is the impact going to be on consumers? Can we learn anything from prior examples that could possibly be implemented? And what impact would that have? As we go through this discussion, I also would like to make a couple of definitions up front, because I think sometimes the language gets a little cloudy. What we're talking about is not always clear. So just to be, you know, clear, you'll hear me refer to multi-channel video programming distributors. Multi-channel video programming distributors, MVPDs, those are cable companies, telephone companies, satellite companies, and actually some electric companies also produce this type of service. So just to be clear about that, everyone is probably very aware of it that's sitting in this room, that's why you're here, but just in case, I wanted to identify that as well. And there are different types of transmission that we're looking at. We're looking at coaxial cable, fiber, you've heard of Fios or fiber optic service. We have copper-based service. You just saw a newspaper article about Frontier buying up some copper wire from Verizon in Connecticut. Just a couple of days ago, the deal was announced. We have hybrid companies that combine coaxial cable and dish, or dish and fiber, or fiber and coaxial as well. And so we have many different types of services out there, many different types of companies and different sectors that are involved in this. And that they are all included in the results that we're looking at here. Provision of video by multi-channel video that you can see on the television. It should also be noted that there's a subtle meaning when states refer to statewide video franchising. There's a distinction in some states, and I want to make that really clear. There are two. One of them is state-issued franchises. And that's where the franchise applications are standardized by the state, but the municipalities continue to regulate activities of the MVPDs. The state regulates, the municipality basically continues, the state franchise is given at the state level, the municipalities continue to regulate. The statewide franchises, as opposed to the state-issued franchises, statewide franchises, the MVPDs receive the license to provide service throughout the state, with a stipulation in the legislation that the provider will build out the entire state in a given amount of time. It's not immediate. Oftentimes they roll out in, you know, a certain amount of years, how much, what percentage of the state needs to be built out. But that's what we're talking about when we talk about statewide franchises versus state-issued franchises. This study looks at both of those. So now I've defined the context, the different types of companies and sectors that are involved in this, as well as the types of laws that are enacted. Some are state-issued franchise, some are statewide franchise laws. Now, I want to move on and talk a little bit about underlying issues. What's important here? I already defined the questions, but let's think in terms of what are the interests, what are the concerns, what are the underlying issues that the stakeholders have. On the plus side, why anyone would want to see statewide video franchising laws rolled out, on the plus side, one could say, well, we expect to see modernization of video infrastructure. So the new rollout, the new technology, would probably be an improvement on existing technology, existing infrastructure. So that's one plus, one thing people are looking for. The second is what's on everybody's mind, especially the telecommunications companies, lower barriers to entry, leveling the playing field, or getting a level playing field. That's something you see in so many different documents, and that's one of the things folks are looking for on the plus side. Lower rates, lower prices. Obviously, customers would love to see that. That's one of the positives that could come from statewide video franchising, or SVF. Sometimes you'll hear me refer to it as that. Better product quality, increased service. Not just multiple channels and more channels that sometimes you look at, sometimes you don't, not that, but also the quality of the distribution, the quality of the signal that you get. That's another plus that we're looking for sometimes as well. And now another that is not usually thought of, but is something that I found in some of the documents, is that there could be positive employment effects. With this build-out, with the increase in infrastructure, comes the need to employ more people to get that done. So that's all on the plus side. Well, there's some counter ideas to this. There are some concerns that people have as well about SVF, statewide video franchising. One is the potential for cherry-picking by the entrants. The entrants can come in and take off the top the customers that are the most lucrative customers, leaving the other customers within the typical service, the incumbent service, and that's a worry. Secondly, build-out drag, that the entrant will take too long to get to all of its customers across the state. Along with that comes the issue of redlining or potential redlining, that communities with lower incomes, with income say below a household income of $30,000, say, that those communities would get missed in the build-out process. That's a concern. Fourth would be reduced accountability to communities, that communities no longer have the control over the provider, and that all of a sudden all of that rests with the state and the communities don't have as much leverage. That could be an issue. Fifth, reduce revenues and access for institutions and organizations. This really refers to issues pertaining to PEG channels, not just location, but just how many channels exist, the fact that, you know, getting those channels out there, INET, all of those things are concerns as well. But you have to weigh those positive potential for a boon to consumers if prices really decline versus some of the other issues that, as you will see as we go along, could possibly be contained and taken into consideration as the legislation is built. So I think of this, as we started going through this process, as a series of building blocks. And we're really trying to identify what are the important building blocks for any legislation that would be put together. And we're getting a sense of that from looking at all the different states. And then we also want to understand, well, how do those building blocks fit together? What is the reasonable way for them to fit together to come up with something that actually will weigh more heavily on the pros and diminish some of the issues and concerns that exist. So that's what we're looking at here. We're trying to identify those building blocks and then figure out how to put them together. Those are the underlying issues. Without laboring too much then, and without giving you all the details, of course, of how this was done, I'm happy to answer questions about that, though. I want to go on and discuss the results. What did we find? What are some of the findings here? Now, the report, in between what I did, where I left off and where I'm going in the report, you'll see that the details are there about the data sets, about a number of different things. But I'd like to just talk a bit about the findings. The first that I'd like to draw your attention to is actually that state laws vary widely. You may not think that's a huge finding, but it's remarkable how different the state laws are. If you look at page 6, if you have the report, you'll see that we chose to focus in on 3 states, the ones in blue, Texas, Michigan, and California, for different reasons. The reasons are illuminated in the report. We also added in Virginia because it's a hybrid model, and Iowa because Quest is in that state, although they have not petitioned for statewide video in Iowa. So I just wanted to bring those states in, although they're not the focus of this study. We were asked to do a minimum of 3 states. We focused in on Texas, the first state to roll in 2005. Michigan, California rolled in 2007. Not that the law was passed then, but that's when the law was implemented in 2007 for Michigan and California. And they have very interesting demographic similarities and dissimilarities to Minnesota, but also some interesting competitors that are in those locations. So that's what we're looking at here. If you look at all the different lists in this column here, franchise fees, tag panel capacity, tag support fees, those 3 areas, the states are remarkably similar. Those are the issues that are very much hot-button topics, and each of the states seem to do very similar things in those areas. When it comes to how INET is handled, the right of way and right of control, huge issue for build-out purposes. Build-out, customer service, and can the incumbent terminate or abandon service in a particular area? How those issues are handled, the states vary widely. You see my point? My point is that the states do vary widely in terms of their laws in aggregate. But there are some places where they really line up and are very similar along the lines of franchise fees, tag count capacity, tag support fees. Those they really do line up. There are some similarities, some standards, if you will. But then there's some other areas that are truly important where the states vary widely in the way the laws are developed. So I think that that's important to look at, because some of the interests that you would have would be in, well, what do we think our industry standards would be, or a legislative standards would be? And another that you would have is, well, if some states are more similar to ours, what are some of the rules and regulations that exist in those states that may be mimicked, or what at least are the results of those rules in those particular states? And that's something that's important to look at. So, state laws vary widely. The second result that I want to point to is that applications for state franchises did increase, but there was an underwhelming increase in the number of entrants into the state after statewide video franchising was passed. So, again, if you were to look at, there's a huge chart. It happens to be the centerfold, which I just love when that happens. It's easy to get to. Take some time, another time, to go through this, and you will see, as we've lined up Texas, Michigan, and California, according to what we were asked to find out in this study by the Department of Commerce, this is where all that information is. But one takeaway from that is that applications for state franchises increased, but the number of entrants was not huge. Also, what you can take away from this chart, many more applications received from incumbent companies than from entrants in Texas and California. That was interesting. The incumbents were applying for many more. But what we couldn't find, because of the way the information is gathered, and the fact that there's no consistent gathering of information state by state by state, we could not determine from the data whether the incumbents drop areas when they apply for state-issued franchises. We could go community by community and find that out, because that's where the information is held. But there was no repository at the state level that we could, or even national level, to say, well, what is true across all of these different states? Are incumbents wholesale dropping or not? It was difficult to find that answer out. We did look in Texas in particular and tried to observe, well, what was going on there? And we did find that there were some communities where there was an increase in just the applications for new services, but the drop did not overwhelm the increase in applications for new areas of service. So that was one, you know, artifact of the study, the example for Texas. To be more specific about that, 2005 and 2006, there were no removals recorded for municipalities in Texas. For 2007 to 2009, we saw uptick in removals totaling several dozen, but scores more were collected, were added in terms of, in service areas of cable companies were added as rivals jockeyed for positions in the state. So all in all, the largest cable companies in Texas expanded their number of municipalities served. The point is, there was initially very little movement. There was then this uptick in drop, but a larger increase in ads, and therefore for Texas alone, it's a net gain in terms of community served. But you would have to go community by community, state by state, to try to get that information. Okay. A third result that I wanted to focus in on, again, you can go in this big thing in the center and look around for more details, but in terms of build-out, miles of plant was one proxy that we tried to get, that we had to use for build-out. You can't just roll in and say, how much money did you spend on infrastructure? You're not going to get that number, right? So we tried to proxy that by looking at miles of plant for cable companies, and that increased measurably in California and Michigan. But in Texas and California, you saw also major growth in the number of communities served. So two ways of looking at this. You want to understand build-out, you can't really get a number for capacity or a financial number. That's hard to get, proprietary. But we could look at miles of plant. Yes, we saw a big increase in California and Michigan. If you look at number of communities served, you see Texas and California saw major growth in those areas by MVPDs. But let me be clear, there are no clear indications that incumbents foresaw market entry. We couldn't see that. We couldn't see that if there were really strong incumbents in an area that all of a sudden market entry was inhibited or prohibited. We did not find that. Okay? In that some sense, that's a little bit of a double negative, but purposely. I can't say that incumbents just willingly let people in, but we didn't find information to say, well, they were really stiff-arming this roll-in of entrants. We didn't see that. A fourth result that we found, that overbill reduced prices between 10 and 15% in the cable industry. Now, let me explain that a little bit. The FCC has a report that they issue annually. Caveat, the 2006 report was released in January of 2009, end of January of 2009. That 2006 report, because it was so late and held up, it did include information for 2007 and 2008. That was great. We got that information. Within that report from the FCC, they used a technique to try to determine what impact overbill, what impact having new cable providers in that industry providing service, what impact does that have on prices? And what they found was that if it's a dish company, very little change in price, if not an increase in price, was found. But it was a wireline company, they found a 10 to 15% decline in price. So if we could assume that, and this is where I have to say, if we could assume that the wireline company would be the similar, you know, cable or telco, eliminating the dish for now, then you could see this decline in price if you have this overbuilt in wireline. That's one of the results that we found. Now, let's go to some of the data that we also use for the study. And those numbers are on page 17. And I'd like you to, if you will, the numbers, pardon me? The Xerox Copy. 26 in the Xerox Copy, 17 in the actual glossy. It's table number 3. And one correction to that table is that the numbers for Texas are 2005 to 2009. Okay? So where it says in Texas 2006, that could be 2005. For Michigan and California, it is 2006. Why? Texas rolled in their legislation in 2005. Michigan and California passed their legislation in 2006, became effective January 1st of 2007. So that's why we had different start dates for the different states. And there was just a typo there, which will then make everything else make a lot more sense to you if you've been looking at this report already. So what I wanted to say about this is you can see that for Texas, we have a bit more time, a bit more observations in terms of months that this policy has been in place, this legislation has been in place. And we can actually see that we have a 7.37% decline in prices in Texas. Why is that? Lots of variables. Okay? There are lots of reasons that could be the case. One reason could be there's just been enough time for it to play out, for the competition to roll in. That's potentially true. It could be that the company size, the sizes of companies that are competing, the ones that entered, the incumbents, that could matter as well, how much monopoly power they have or not. The types of commodities that they bundle, are they bundling telephone, cable, and internet, or are they providing really just these separate services? What are they putting in their packages? How are those packages developed? That's going to make a difference in terms of the prices that you see. Many other aspects, too, that could explain these differences. If you look at Michigan and California, you see an increase in price, not a decline, from statewide video franchising rolling in. Potentially, why would that be the case? We have pretty much a year's worth, 2 years' worth of data here that we're working with. So maybe there isn't enough time to really see the impact of the competition. It's also true for California that we have Verizon rolling files. A very expensive, I think it's what, $1,000 a customer or so for the infrastructure to roll? I hope that's exactly right, but that's the number I have in my head. It's expensive. And so you have to recoup those costs, and that could be reflected in price increases. If you're bundling the triple play as opposed to providing single services, that could be reflected too. If you have multiple channels that are an increased number of channels that you're providing, because now you have fiber, now you have broadband as opposed to copper, that could make a difference too, because you have to adjust those prices for quality changes. Not an easy task to do. So there are many reasons why we saw for Texas a reduction in prices, for California and Michigan we see a real increase in prices. And you can see there we did some adjustments as well for inflation to make sure we're just not looking at prices just picking up along with other prices in our economy. Okay? One other piece that I wanted to bring to your attention, the next page has an adjustment to these prices for if there are many, many, many more channels rolled out, how do we adjust prices to take into a per channel rate? Now, the number for Texas is huge, and that is because, again, we're using 2005 in that case, not 2006. We're looking at 2005 to 2009. if you were to take those numbers and run those numbers for Texas for 2006 to 2009, you would not get anywhere near this big uptick. So that difference is really the time period of the newness of the policy in 2005 to 2006. You see a big spike, but if you roll those numbers back and you only look at 2006 to 2009 for all three of these states, you see reasonable numbers here, not the big increase in price per Texas. There's one other chart that I wanted to bring your attention to. You can look at it at another time, but what's interesting in this chart, it's a very large chart, it's table number 4, 19 in the glossy and 29 in the paper handout. The numbers in here are for 2006 to 2009 only. So we don't have any differentiation based on when a policy was put in place. We didn't do that here. We just wanted a chart that was streamlined. Everything, December 2006 to February 2009, let's look at the differences in prices. Bring your attention to where Minnesota is. Minnesota, anything in white does not have statewide video franchising. The yellow does have statewide video franchising. And the blue, those are states that actually had some kind of oversight even before 2005. Everyone thinks of 2005 as the start date, but not necessarily. In many, many states, about 10 states actually, that have some kind of oversight of video statewide. So not just, you know, the beginning in 2005 was statewide video franchising. Just bringing that to your attention. So anything in white states that have not yet had any kind of policy in place on this issue, or any kind of legislation in place on this issue. Minnesota's price change, as you can see, rate per channel, is one of the higher ones, right? But you can look at the yellow bands and see that it isn't necessarily so that just because it has, a state has legislation on statewide video franchising that is necessarily going to have the lower price increases. Some do, some don't. So that's what this chart tells you. That gives you a summary of what we found across a number of states. We were asked to look at three states in detail. That's what we did. But just so you could have some sense of where things rank among all the states, that's where we are. So let me conclude. More than half the states in the U.S. have some form of statewide authority over licensing of the video services sector. Regulations and outcomes vary widely, signaling one of two things. One, it is too soon to tell, because some of these states have only had the laws in place for a couple of years, so it's really too soon. It may be too soon to tell. But the other takeaway from this is that one size strategy may not fit all. It is not necessarily so that we can look at this and look at all these building blocks and say, here's the ultimate way in which the tax is to be delivered if the legislation were to be built. We need to understand a lot more nuance of, you know, what needs to be put in place. But we could see from earlier part of the presentation that PEG, fees, and certain things like that are pretty consistent across states. That's something I wanted you to see. A few more conclusions. Overbill yields reduction in prices, that's from the FCC report, but statewide video franchising does not necessarily lead to increased competition and lower prices. You have to take them both together because we're not really sure. It depends. In some cases, we do get that decline, and I want to underscore the fact that it may be too soon to tell. All right? And then another thing that I wanted to say here is the last point in the conclusions is that other factors such as more channels, cost increases from infrastructure expenses, and commodity bundling could increase real prices even as the number of market rivals increase. So there are other factors, too, that you would have to tease out to see what is the net effect of statewide video franchising. Those are that's the sum total of my comments. Thank you very much, and I am very happy to answer your questions as well as Steve. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much, Ms. Husband-Feeling, for your presentation. Open up for questions for members. There's a lot of information to digest clearly. But we'll take a few minutes to proceed with questions. Representative Hoppe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got one quick question. early in your comments, you mentioned that one of the things that might happen is the providers might pick off the most lucrative customers.
Mm-hmm.
And could you just define for us what your research would lead you to believe are the most lucrative customers?
The most lucrative...
It's a feeling.
Sorry. She's jumping the gun. The most lucrative customers would be those who would be willing to buy the bundle, the commodity bundle, would be those who have the higher incomes in the cities. Those are usually the areas that we think about when we talk about the more lucrative customers. Partly it's a density issue. If you can roll fiber to a very densely populated area and you get more customers, that would be a concern. So one of the things that's been done in California, they asked Verizon to roll out, build out a certain percentage in a certain amount of time, and they have very specific details on what Verizon needs to do and very specific details on what AT&T needs to do. When Texas initiated its policy, they did not have very explicit policy on redlining or not redlining. That has evolved because, well, they were first in this wave, and so the more Michigan, California, with a number of other states now have very clearly delineated how build out should work and how to avoid the redlining issue. So I think that the policy, the legislation has evolved over time to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. I'm happy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And good answer. And I'm just wondering, did you find any correlation between the most lucrative customers and density? Is there any, you know, you'd think that people that are most lucrative customers would be the people that have a higher income and you know, you'd think could afford more. But was there any correlation there, or was it more looking at, for the company's perspective, were they looking at most lucrative because of density? Did that come up in any of the states?
Yes, I've been feeling.
That is something that I can look at. I didn't look at it in great detail. I didn't run a full panel of data on that, but I did talk to a number of folks on the phone who made it clear that there was this correlation. They were looking for opportunities, or could look for opportunities in a more dense area, but that's not... The legislation is prohibiting that from happening, is limiting that ability for redlining.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hoppe, legislature was relatively specific in terms of the details they asked the study to explore, and sort of delving into whether redlining or cherry picking actually occurs was not one of those questions. So we didn't do the kind of work that would have enabled a more precise answer to your question.
Thanks.
Very good. Oh, Representative Mason?
Mr. Chair, either one of you, first of all, thank you for a marvelous testimony. It was really easy to follow. What I'm gathering for this is, you know, we have a lot of figures now, but you keep saying it's too early to tell. So can you give me some idea of how the best way that we can use the figures, and then it sounds like we're going to have to go back and get some more information in another year or two. So what type of time frame would you be looking at?
Ms. Hudson-Tiemann?
That is a very good question. I think looking at Texas and looking at that example, we begin to see the price declines that one would expect with an increase in competition. That is a 2005 begin date, and we went all the way to January 2009 with our data. But it's hard to draw really big conclusions, grand conclusions, from one particular example. So my reason for saying, well, take that, Texas, we can look at different communities. We could see the negative numbers for those communities in terms of declining prices, percentage-wise. That's a good story. But my reason for saying, but we do need to observe this in many other contexts because of differences in demographics, differences in the companies that serve those areas, that it's really wise to look at more recent states, to get a bigger panel of states and look at them over a longer timeline. And you're asking, how much time are you talking about? Well, for Texas, it was just one more year where we began to see some differences, right? So I would say a 3-year or 4-year timeline, which would add a couple, not from now, but from the beginning of, so from 2007, January, for say Michigan and California, you'd expect to see some difference. You don't want to go too far out because also there's very big economic changes. There are even changes in the technology today, things that exist today that didn't exist in 2005. That would enable possibly a quicker build-out or a more, expansive build-out that could lead to better options in rural communities as well as the city. So I think it's wise to take Texas as an example, but I also think it's wise to think about the other communities and those spikes in prices and think about all the reasons why that could happen, including the timeline.
Mr. Cameron, Representative Mason, another way of approaching it that fits with Dr. Husband's feelings conclusions is that, especially if you look at the FCC data, you get this conclusion that overbuilding, that having more than one landline provider in this multi-channel space does lead to price reduction. But you don't, for example, Minnesota doesn't have a statewide video franchising law, but we do have overbuilt communities. So statewide video franchising is one tool that could lead to additional investment, but as the report shows, it may be too soon to tell whether that investment has actually occurred at the rate that the proponents of the legislation hoped for. So overbuilding produces an effect. It's unclear that the statewide video franchising law leads to sufficient overbuilding to change prices.
Dr. Husband-Filling, can you speak a little bit to the issue of the effect on PEG channel capacity and quality and what you found out with respect to statewide video franchising?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I found that with respect to PEG channels in a different state, there was a great deal of care taken in some states to ensure that there was no reduction in service, number of channels, and that the channel access was preserved. Now, there were some states, and we all know the stories about slamming and such, but because those instances occurred, in California, for example, there was a great deal of care taken in preserving at least 3 channels and possibly more channels depending on population density for PEG. So there was some consistency there, and I think that some of the problems that happened, say, in Wisconsin and the Michigan cases, highlighted the fact that any state-wide legislation would need to take very careful attention to the number of channels and positioning of channels. Now, some of that issue is going away with the move to nationally to digital, because part of the issue was, well, if the channels move way up to the 900s or the 700s tier, that is going to be an inconvenience for access because everyone wouldn't have digital. So with the digital rolling in, I think it's next month, then some of that issue pertaining to PEG would go away. That was part of what I found.
Thank you. Members, any other questions right now? Could you say a little bit, Doctor, and again on the effect of video franchising on low-income regions? What was your sense of what statewide video franchising did in those areas?
We didn't we didn't have the capacity to differentiate based on income. We didn't do that type of analysis. One way to get at it would be to look at some of the communities that we highlighted, I think, in Table 3, where some of these communities would be lower income, say, than Dallas, say, if you're looking at Texas, the one where we have the most data. And some of these counties would be lower than that. And as you can see, the biggest decline in price occurred in Dallas here, but Llano and Lubbock, Harris, some smaller communities, we paired this by population density, so we tried to get down to the 50th, just above the 50th percentile in population. So we're looking to go from highly populated to lower population density. And you could see that for some of those counties, they did have the price decline, with the exception of Harris. So I would just stick with looking at Texas, because that's the most data. You can look at the stratification by population density. That's how those counties appear. And you could see that there is some change here, and in the direction one would expect with increased competition. But clearly, Dallas got the biggest effect.
Very good. And Doctor, could you speak a little bit to the issue of municipal franchise fees and how that played out in your research?
It's, to me, every of the three states we looked at intensively, we found that the fees were, let me go back and look at the chart. I think it was 5%. So if everybody looks at Table 1, the franchise fees were, it was written into the law, stipulated, they would match incumbents and they would have 5% of gross revenues. In every single state that we looked at, the ones that are here and others, they seem to say that that was what they wanted to continue with the standard that existed before. They didn't want much of a change in the law. Or didn't write much of a change into the law on franchise fees, peg channels, and number of peg channels and support fees for peg channels in the state as a not as so what they were expecting, I would say, is increased competition, increased number of entrants for the incumbents to roll out to more communities and for build out to be more prolific. That's what I think was intended. But there would not be a decline in fees going to communities. In some cases, you'd find that the state would collect the fees and then pass those fees to the communities as well, and that was the way it worked. In Virginia, the hybrid, you'd find that the companies could negotiate for about up to 120 days with the local communities first on franchise, and then if that didn't come to fruition, then they would go to the state level and negotiate on fees and peg and the statewide franchise. So that hybrid model was an interesting way of giving a bit more power to the municipalities, but with the possibility of having the statewide allowance for build-out across the state, and that was what happened in Virginia.
And the general or specific terms, what kind of pushback did you find out or get a sense of with respect to local control and the communities wanting to control their own?
Well, that was certainly the case, that there was a concern, and that was one of the concerns we enumerated, that if this is statewide video franchising and something happens to a resident's property in a community, who do you go to service that, or who's responsible for taking care of that? The person, the resident is going to knock on the door of the local representative, but yet if the control is at the state level, there was a concern that there would be a disconnect there. I think that some of the rules that I've seen, some of the legislations that we've seen, allow for more control at the municipality, even though the statewide franchise is granted, the statewide build-out is granted, or the franchise is given statewide, those two definitions that I made earlier on, but then the control, some more of the control and some of the fees go to the municipality. So that is written in, that in some states.
good. And Doctor, what can you tell me about satellite TV and that and its effect in any of this?
So the FCC report, the dish companies, so I think Steve Kelly mentioned a few minutes ago that from the FCC report, if you look at wireline build-out, so cable and potentially also telecommunication build-out, you would see a reduction in prices. That was clear. And it was from like $49 to $47, $46 or something like that. That's the kind of number that you were looking at, right? Not the reduction, but the differences in the fees. When they look at dish, they actually do not see any change or even an uptick. So they don't see that competition being as effective in it and how prices change, or at least in reducing prices. Dish doesn't seem to have that effect. That comes from the FCC report. We didn't go into our data and stratify by all the different types, you know, electric, dish, fiber, etc., except for the anecdotal evidence and the interviews where we have a sense of, well, what did Verizon do, what did AT&T do, what did Charter, you know, we did do that, and we did have several conversations with PUC. The RAs will attest to that. But when we want to, if you want to see an overall number, get a sense of, you know, what impact do you get from wireline versus this, clearly wireline had much more of an impact on prices in the direction you'd expect, a negative price decline, and this didn't have any effect or actually an uptick in prices.
Very good. Well, thank you much for your presentation this morning. Industry members and others in the audience, if you have any questions after looking at the report and had time to digest it, submit your questions to Mr. Reich here, and we'll get some answers for you. And we'll deal with it in that regard. Thank you very much for your report. We have a little bit of a tired group here today, including myself. We'll have a chance to read through the report and look forward to further dialogue with you on it.
Thanks,
again, thank you very much. Members, this meeting is adjourned.